You say you seek God, but a ray of light doesn't seek the sun. It's coming from the sun. You are a branch on the vine of God. A branch doesn't seek the vine. It's already part of the vine. A wave doesn't look for the ocean. It's already full of ocean.
Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona welcomes you to another season of our podcast, Taste and See. This time we're talking about contemplation into the silent land.
Okay, friends, well, we're back. Ted and Gray here with a bonus episode or the final episode of the season.
That's right. This is the epilogue. The epic epilogue, the conclusion of the book, which I'll be honest, Ted, the first time I read the book, I didn't read the epilogue. And it was actually you who told me, you need to go back and check out that epilogue. And I did, and I've read it many times since. So it's a special moment that really brings together a lot of the things that he's talked about throughout the book.
Yeah, it stands by itself too, really. I've read it often to people who haven't read the book, just read this, and it can really be a deep encouragement. And so the way we want to do this is just, there's two parts to it. Read through the first part, pause, share what we're experiencing and noticing, then read the second part and just share a little bit. And we want to invite you to do the same. You might even at the end of the first part of the reading, just hit pause and consider, what are you noticing? What are you experiencing? And then you could listen to us share whatever's on our hearts. And we have interacted with this before, but we're going to be sharing our thoughts in real time. We don't have anything prepared.
Absolutely. And it is a story, by the way. It's a parable. So it's a different format. That's why we're reading it out loud. It really works well as a story. But then what you glean from it, I think there's lots of different directions you can go. I'll be interested to see what our thoughts are as we go along.
Thank you for joining us on the Taste and See podcast, a podcast of the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona. Our vision for the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona is to create space for leaders and learners to grow in deepening intimacy with God. Check out sfsaz.org for more information and resources, and consider joining us at an upcoming event. Now back to the podcast.
Who am I? A tale of monastic failure. There once was a young man who didn't have the foggiest notion of what he wanted to do with his life. One day he said to himself, I know what, I'll enter a monastery. But not just any monastery, I want to enter a real monastery. So off he went, determined to find a real monastery. He came to the first monastery he could find and knocked on the door. The porter answered the door and said to the young man, good afternoon. How may I help you? The young man said, I'd like to enter a monastery, but it's got to be a real monastery. Is this a real monastery? The porter towered over him and pierced him with his dark eyes. He said to the young man, I'm sure you'd be more than welcome here, but I'm afraid I shall have to tell you we're not a real monastery at all. We're a fake monastery, you see. We're only pretending. So if you've got your heart set on a real monastery, I'm afraid you'll have to carry on down the road a bit until you come to the real monastery. You'll come to it before long. Now off with you. There's a good fellow. The young man was delighted. He bade the porter farewell and set down the road to find the real monastery. Soon he came to a large sign pointing down a small road that led into the woods. The sign read, "Real Monastery, 100 yards. Rubbing his hands in excitement, he followed the little road into the woods. He knocked on the door, and the porter of the monastery soon answered, "Good afternoon. How may I help you?" The young man's jaw dropped in amazement. He was certain it was the very same monk who was the porter at the fake monastery just up the road. The young man said, "I'd like to enter a real monastery." The porter clasped his hands together and said, "Well, you've come to the right place. Just come right in, and I'll take you down to the novitiate. I'm sure something can be arranged." On the way, the porter explained to the young man how fortunate he was not to have fallen for that fake monastery up the road. The young man settled into the novitiate with relative ease. He found he liked all his fellow novices and pretty much all the monks he came across. It wasn't long before he felt certain he wanted to stay here the rest of his days, so he went to the novice master and said, "I believe I'm ready to make my profession." The novice master said, "Well, the abbot will have to see you about this." In due course, an appointment with the abbot was arranged, and the young man sat down to speak with the abbot about his vocation. The abbot asked him why he felt he was ready to make his profession. The young man said, "Well, I've come to like it here very much. Everyone's nice to me, and I like all the monks." The abbot said, "Well, that's very encouraging to hear, and I have to say that we're very happy to have you and hope that you stay. But just the same, I think you should go back to the novitiate for a while longer. It'll do you no harm." The young man left in great distress. Why didn't the abbot want him to make his profession? Did he say something wrong? Was he deluded about his vocation? Not a little disappointed, the young man returned to his life as a novice. The abbot's gentle rebuff ended up teaching the young man a great deal about his own faults and failings and presumption. He began to grow in self-knowledge and applied himself with great dedication to the study of the monastery's long history, its tradition, and various customs. He soon mastered all of this. After more than a year, the young man was convinced that now he would be able to answer correctly any questions the abbot might put to him, and he could see, moreover, the abbot's wisdom in putting him off for a time. And so the young man told the novice master that he felt he was now ready to make his profession, and could he please see the abbot? The novice master arranged this, and soon enough, the young man was brought to the abbot. The abbot said, "I'm very happy to hear that you still want to make your profession and to live out your monastic life among us. But tell me, why do you feel you're ready to make your profession?" The young man responded, "I'm convinced that this is what God is asking of me. I don't claim to understand it. I only know it's something I must do. Moreover, I've been studying our traditions and our charism. I identify with it very deeply, and I think it confirms the sense of interior call that I feel." The abbot was obviously listening to him very intently and sincerely. He said to the young man, "What you say is very edifying indeed, and I feel even myself encouraged in the life just listening to you speak the way you do about your conviction of God's love for you and of his call. But I think you should go back to the novitiate until you are really ready." The man was in quite a state as he left the abbot's office. He was, in fact, completely shattered. He couldn't imagine what on earth the abbot could possibly have wanted to hear. He knew he belonged more in a monastery than half of those other wretched monks, but he returned to the novitiate. He had already completed his formal studies, so he took to helping in the garden, pruning vines and thinning carrots, and also served in the infirmary. He carried on with these jobs for what seemed like years. One day, the abbot asked the novice master, "What about that man who was so intent on making his profession in our monastery? Is he no longer interested?" "He doesn't mention it much anymore," said the novice master. "Is he unhappy?" asked the abbot. "No, he seems content enough," responded the novice master. "He doesn't say much to anyone. He goes about his tasks in the garden. He consoles the old monks in the infirmary and encourages the new ones in the novitiate. "Bring him to me," said the abbot. The man was brought to the abbot, who began to question him. "I was wondering if you were still interested in making your profession. You don't seem as keen to do it as you once were when you were making such a thorough study of our tradition. Have you gone off the idea altogether?" The man looked at the abbot. The lines beginning to show round the man's eyes reflected the fact that he'd been in the monastery a number of years now. But his face had the freshness and peace of those whose poverty had taught them they had nothing to defend. The man said to the abbot, "Jesus Christ is my monastery." The abbot sat up in his chair and leaned forward. He gazed into the man as though looking for something, looked into him as though gazing into the heart of mystery. His gaze fixed on the man, sifting him, assessing every turn, every decision made in order to know if this man really knew what he had said. The abbot stood up slowly, towered over him, and he said, "You have learned our tradition well. May I have your blessing." So there's the end of part one of this parable. So let's pause for a moment. Gray and listener, if you want to pause and consider what you've heard, and then you can come back to listening to Gray and I share what's stirring within us.
Note that the first thing that strikes me about the young man's quest is this idea of the real monastery. And as a one-time seminary student myself, and you know, I think it goes beyond people who are just interested in ministry, there's this idea that that true life, true truth, you know, the premium, whatever, is out there, and you need to go find it. You know, whatever it is, like, finally you found a way to organize things so that your whole world is in order. Finally, you know, the theologian will put you at ease because they have really figured out the answers to all the questions. Or finally you have a tradition or a denomination that you think is going to kind of solve your inner desires and some of the tensions that you felt in other denominations, maybe where you grew up. There's this idea of now I can finally find it and it's outside of myself. That quest is very real and very tempting.
Yeah. I think part of what strikes me as I listen to this part of the parable again is the propensity, the temptation to use ministry as our God, in essence, that what we're really looking for in God and what he's inviting us into, we use ministry to satisfy some of those things. It's like we want to still be in control. I feel like that in my own life. In some ways, I've always had mixed motives and will till the day I die. I think I'm just maybe more aware of it now, but certainly early in my life of ministry in particular, without even knowing it, I was probably using ministry to try to satisfy some unmet needs in my life. I pray that I'm increasing to be in a place where I could say Jesus Christ is my monastery. Jesus Christ is the one who I'm always looking toward.
Mm. You know, something, Ted, that struck me this time on this reading that I hadn't really thought about before is the real gentleness of the abbot. And even for the different stages, right? And I think back on some of the things that I've said to those who were either in leadership over me or were helping me in some kind of way on the journey, even things 8 years ago at the start of my spiritual direction journey when I was just meeting with a spiritual director for the first time, some of the things that came out of my mouth that I'm embarrassed of now, you know? And the fact that in this case, she didn't, my spiritual director didn't just throw up roadblocks and say, you're an idiot, or there was a gentleness there, right? And the abbot knows that this is the journey, right? He put up the sign that says real monastery, you know, this way, right? So he's directing this, right? He's in a sense patient with the process. And I don't know, that's beautiful. When you have those people that are patient with you through the spiritual journey, that's another lesson too.
Yeah. This monk comes to the place of saying, Jesus Christ is my monastery. Mm-hmm. Essentially, yeah, I don't need to go through anything official. I don't even really care anymore. It's essentially what he's saying. And it's as though the abbot says, ah, now,
right.
Now you're ready when you don't need it. Mm-hmm. And so part two of the parable then unpacks. So how did he get there? Right. How did he go from, oh gosh, I really, really want this, to I really, really think I can prove that I'm worthy, mm-hmm. to just faithfully serving in the garden and serving in the infirmary? And when asked if he wants to make his profession as a monk and become official, he basically says, that's okay.
I don't need it.
Yeah. So what happens? That's part two.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read it. After this man's second request for profession had been turned down, the abbot had sent him back to the novitiate until he was truly ready. He was in complete despair. The last rejection had unleashed within him a flood of swirling anxiety. He was seen working quietly around the place, but in fact, he was only keeping up appearances. Underneath his novice robes were spasms of chaos that would assault him like pounding waves. Once the chaos within was churning, it was all he could do to keep putting one foot in front of the other and somehow just manage to hold on. When the spasms of chaos let up, he would merely try to catch his breath and hope against hope that this was the last of these tidal waves of fear and panic. But it never was. Weeks became months. He realized that he needed help, but to whom could he go? The novice master was allergic to life, and his regular confessor was completely switched off. There were 150 monks in the monastery. Who could help him? A certain Father Alypius eventually came to mind. Father Alypius was something of a maverick, but he was thought to be wise. He was the cobbler and more or less lived in his little shop down at the bottom of the garden. He rarely spoke to anyone. It was said that he could read people's hearts, so everyone stayed away. The young man said to himself, I've got to go to him. The next day at prayers, he left a note in Father Alypius's place in chapel. Can I talk to you about something? By early afternoon, he got his reply. Come to me this evening after supper. So after supper, he crept down to the bottom of the garden to speak with Father Alypius. Crouched over a table, Father Alypius was sitting on a stool repairing someone's shoes. He peered over the top of his spectacles and said, sit down and tell me what's wrong. The young man went on for an eternity. He told him everything about his life, about his search for a real monastery, about his refusal for profession. All the while, Father Alypius was working away on this one shoe. When the young man had finished, Father Alypius said, I have just one question for you. Who are you? I just told you, said the young man. No, you told me about the clothes you wear. You told me your name, where you're from, what you've done, the things you've studied. Your problem is you don't know who you are. Let me tell you who you are. You are a ray of God's own light. Sounds a bit silly, the young man thought to himself, but he was intrigued, so he said, what do you mean? You say you seek God, but a ray of light doesn't seek the sun. It's coming from the sun. You are a branch on the vine of God. A branch doesn't seek the vine. It's already part of the vine. A wave doesn't look for the ocean. It's already full of ocean. Because you don't know that who you are is one with God, you believe all these labels about yourself. I'm a sinner. I'm a saint. I'm a wretch. I'm a worm and no man. I'm a monk. I'm a nurse. These are all labels, clothing. They serve a purpose, but they are not who you are. To the extent that you believe these labels, you believe a lie, and you add anguish upon anguish. It's what most of us do for most of our lives. In the secular world, we call it our career. In monastic terms, we call it our vocation. Before you can know in your own experience what the psalmist meant when he said, "Be still and know that I am God," you must first learn to be still and know who you are. The rest will follow. Then Father Alypius said, "Tell me about your prayers." "Well, I never miss the community prayers," the young man replied. "I didn't ask you about saying your prayers. I asked about prayer." "Do you mean silent prayer?" "Tell me about that." "I have trouble being silent," said the young man. "But you are already silent. I understand how there's a lot of noise and chaos swirling around. That's true of all of us, but you are silence. You are the silence that is aware of the chaos. You are the silence that sees the chaos. Again, I tell you, you don't know who you are." "What's all this chaos then?" asked the young man. "It's just weather. Tell me, what happens when you sit in silence?" "I try to give myself over to contemplation and then get lost in thoughts." "But silence," Father Alypius said, "silence and contemplation are concerned with what is deeper than thinking, with that vastness in which the things going on in your head appear. When this vastness full of vibrant emptiness is recognized to be the center of all appearances, even the inner chaos, then it becomes obvious that contemplation, silence, is always present." "I think I've glimpsed something of this, but normally I'm just lost in my thoughts," confessed the young man. "Are you? I thought you were a ray of God's own light, a branch on the vine. Now you say you're something different. You say you are someone lost in thoughts. But isn't this thought, 'I am lost in my thoughts,' just another thought? Just another label that's being believed? We assume we are our thoughts. But look and see, are you lost in your thoughts?" "Well, not right now, but if I went back and tried to sit in silence, there would be this inner chatter. I know my mind should be quiet. I should be having no thoughts." Father Alypius continued his instruction. "These new thoughts, my mind should be quiet. I shouldn't be having thoughts, are noisier than the previous thoughts. But these particular thoughts are believed to be truth. Believing them to be the truth distracts you from the deeper reality. Silence is naturally present. Silence cannot not be there. When you think, 'I'm lost in my thoughts, my mind should be silent,' just stop for a second and ask, 'Who is lost? Who is not quiet?' Do it right now." There was a pause. The young man looked hard. Father Alypius asked him, "When you look directly into the thought, do you see someone who is lost?" "No, there's no one there. There's no one who is lost. In that moment, there is not a chatterer. But then that moment is gone and all the chatter comes back." "That's right," cheered Father Alypius. Thoughts keep coming back because that's just what thoughts do. But if you look directly at the thought or feeling and ask, who is the chatterer? Who is suffering? You won't find anybody. You won't find a sufferer. There will be chattering, sure. Suffering, sure. The thoughts coming and going. Don't look at the suffering, the anguish, the fear. These are objects of awareness. I'm asking you to look into the awareness itself, not the objects of awareness. These have dominated your attention for decades. Let your attention rest in the awareness, not in the objects of awareness. Yes, I can see on your face, the mind grows still. Tell me, what do you see? Nothing, said the young man, just this vast nothing. Tell me, what is the substance of all this chatter and chaos in your head? The young man responded, it's just fluff. That's right, said Father Alypius. Do you see how simple it is? It's not special or verified. It's not because you've been chanting for 9 hours straight or fasting for the last 3 weeks. These monastic strategies are of no use because it has already been accomplished. When you see that you are caught up in the storms of chaos, inner chatter, and mental commentary, ask yourself, who am I? Ask, who is experiencing the chaos? Who is chattering? Who is the commentator? You won't find anyone there checking to see if you are caught in the thoughts. When you turn your attention from the object of your awareness to the awareness of itself, there is just silent, vast openness that has never been wounded, harmed, angry, frightened, incomplete. This is who you are. On many evenings, a young man would make his way down to the bottom of the garden for conversations with Father Alypius. They were all about the question, who am I? The young man grew in wisdom in this paradox of identity, and there was a great calm about him. On their final meeting, Father Alypius said, you have mastered the question, who am I? I would like to put to you another question. Who is Jesus Christ? The young man was fixed in a silent inner gaze. As he looked at the young man, Father Alypius' face brightened. He could see that the young man knew. He sat back and returned to repairing a shoe and said to the young man, well done. Now off with you. I believe the abbot wants to have a word with you. The end. So again, let's just take a moment and pause. What do you hear? What stirs within you? Well, Gray, what do you hear? What stands out to you?
Two thoughts, Ted, that really summarize well what the book is about, I think, but just come out with striking clarity. And you see it in a story form. We are not our thoughts, right? That's what he said many times throughout the book. The thoughts that we have are different than who we are, right? And just to return back to what he says, maybe the climax of the second part where he says, you say you seek God, but a ray of light doesn't seek the sun. It's coming from the sun. You are a branch on the vine of God. A branch doesn't seek the vine. It's already part of the vine. A wave doesn't look for the ocean. It's already full of ocean, which takes us right back to the very first chapter of the book where he says, your life is hidden with Christ and God. Christ is the substance of your life. You don't have to do anything to unlock it. It's about discovery of who you are, not about achieving of something that is outside of you. I just think it can't be said better than that. What he says here, these images are so powerful.
Yeah, the ray of light, the vine, the ocean, and he alludes to it in some of Father Alypius's words, back to that image of you're not the weather, you're the mountain. Mm-hmm. And that image continues to stick with me. And it's incredibly striking that once we understand who we are, then we can answer that question with a fullness of who is Jesus Christ. When we understand that who we are as a ray or as the wave or as the vine, then we go, oh, okay, we can see the vine and the ocean and the sun itself. Yeah. And you know, that I think we've talked about this before. It reminds me of what Calvin says in the Institutes, that self-knowledge and our knowledge of God go together. And the way that he describes that in this final little parable illustrate that brilliantly. Well, anything else before we close our final episode of this season?
Makes me eager just to continue in this life of God. You know, I think there's an invitation here that is striking if you're going to slow down enough to look at it and see that the chatter, the movies, the weather, whatever image you want to use, doesn't have to dominate our lives. You know, we can have a full life in God and view those things as what's happening to us. It's just a powerful invitation. It really changes the way that you think about, you know, the noise that comes into your life and the starting point that you have, which is already so secure, you know. So it makes me eager to follow the invitation even deeper. You know, I wonder where I am myself in this journey. And I know for certain I'm past the first phase. I've come to the end of that. I've definitely come to that end of that, like, what's the real monastery? What's the, you know, the kind of like, I'm happy here. I like studying theology. I like, you know, learning about God. And I've gone into the darker places, you know. And I think I'm still in process in that kind of between the second and the third phase of like coming and really saying this is where my identity is. And it's totally wrapped up in who God is I can see the outline of the destination. You know, I think in some ways I'm still coming back to the monk myself. You know, I'm still coming back to that guy over and over and saying, is this really who I am? Is this really who I am? And so I'm just eager to follow the invitation myself.
Me too. And this is why we have things like Be Still, so that we can journey together. Because I think increasingly we're finding in our community that this is a shared desire. And so, listener, thank you for joining us on this season, and encourage you to be a part of those monthly gatherings called Be Still. And by the time you hear this, we will have started another monthly offering called Simple Silence. And you can find that on our website as well. Also on a Tuesday night, it's at Canaan. And another offering, there's no discussion, there's no prelude. It's just simple silence, literally. Come in quietly and leave quietly. So, again, thank you, and thanks to you, Gray. It's such a gift to get to share in these times with you.